Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information and support.
I'd like to introduce Phil Longworth, who is the CEO at Bradbury Fields up in Liverpool. Hi, Phil.
Hiya.
Hi, Phil. It's good to be speaking to you again. Do you want to just start off by telling us a little bit about yourself and maybe how you got the position you're in now?
Well, long story then. I went to St Vincent's, as you and probably listeners will know. And when I left St Vincent's, I went for a period of time to study music. Found I couldn't cope visually, and so got a job in industry working for a tool supply company. Always knew ultimately I wanted to get into some sort of social work, and when I was old enough, I went to train as a technical officer for the blind, and on qualifying got a job at Christopher Grange as one of the technical officers and the tutors. Did that for about 3 years and then joined RNIB as an employment officer and worked with RNIB in a variety of roles. I did a research post for a year and then managed the Northern Regional Employment Service for about 4 years before I came back to Liverpool and back to Christopher Grange to take over as a rehabilitation centre manager. Did that for about 8 years, and as part of that role did quite a lot of training of staff both within Christopher Grange and at St Vincent School around visual awareness, how the eye works, and a whole load of other communication type things. And then left to go to Age Concern in St Helens as chief officer. Stayed there for 14 years, but in that time we merged three Age Concerns into one larger organisation, primarily to try and reduce some of the costs of each organisation, but also to try and keep services afloat in amongst massive funding cuts. And then this opportunity came up 2 years ago. And at the time, I wasn't really going to apply for it until literally the day before Liverpool City Council announced massive funding cuts. And then I thought, well, I've got some experience of that, so I probably, you know, would bring something to the post that might be useful to the organisation. And to cut long story short, I applied, was interviewed, crazy sort of interview process because I was on jury service at the time, so my interview was on a Saturday morning. And I got offered the job and took up post in 2013, literally just over 2 years ago now.
Wow, that's some career.
And you're only 21, aren't you, Phil?
Yeah, 21 stone.
So do you want to, I mean, some people will have heard of Bradbury Fields and others won't. So do you want to give us a bit of background about Bradbury Fields and, you know, what people can expect from Bradbury Fields if they're in the area?
Yeah, Bradbury Fields, everybody says, what is it? It has a sort of strap line to its name that says services for blind and partially sighted people. And many listeners might remember an organisation that was called Liverpool Voluntary Society for the Blind. And actually, it changed its name to become Bradbury Fields. So it's the same organisation with a new name that it's had now probably for 6-7 years maybe. And we have contracts from Liverpool, the principal contracts, Liverpool City Council, from Knowsley Borough Council, and from Sefton Social Services, and little bits of money that come in from the health service, from the Royal Hospital, from Aintree Hospital. And essentially what happens is that if we look at Liverpool as the biggest sort of contract and the biggest area we cover, we hold a register in Liverpool for anybody who's certified as eligible to be registered as blind or partially sighted. And so part of that process, we have what are called eye clinic liaison officers in Liverpool Royal Hospital and in Aintree Hospital. And their role is to see people at the point of diagnosis and effectively build the bridge from health services into community services. And in our case, what they do is they will then refer people up to our rehabilitation team so that everybody can be seen by a rehabilitation officer and a full assessment made of their needs and what support they need, all done on an individual basis, so that, you know, if somebody needs the light touch approach, they need the cooker's marking or they need a liquid level indicator or whatever it may be, right the way through to somebody then needs referring on for intensive rehabilitation centre training through Christopher Grange, or they can only do and want to do sort of domiciliary training in their own home areas. We'll follow that through as well. So that's the sort of registration and rehabilitation support service. And then in addition to the rehab officers, we have rehab assistants who, if somebody needs some follow-up then at any stage, say the talking clock's gone wonky or whatever, they can go out and sort of help fix that. If somebody's equipment breaks, then that can be sorted as well. So we use the appropriate level sort of staff for the appropriate level job. Our rehab team's really specialist, and I think probably unique in the country, in so much that many of the staff have been there for a long time, but they've also then developed other specialisms around their visual impairment knowledge. So one of my staff is a specialist in what many people will understand if I say deaf blind. It's also got a new fancy name in the 21st century of dual sensory. We've got people who are experienced in what are called acquired brain injuries, and that's things like strokes, accidents, hemorrhages, any brain disorder. And somebody who's, you know, trained as an architect before they've come into us as a rehab officer. So any of the built environment stuff is really easy for us to get a technical view on. We've got people then who are trained as low vision therapists on top of the rehabilitation skills. So they can do all elements of low vision assessment and training. And of course, a lot of that work across the whole rehabilitation team will include appropriate lighting for people who are using sort of low levels of vision. So a really specialised team, and to that extent we're often asked by other agencies if some of our staff can support them if they've got really complex cases. And I think that's the way forward, because, you know, there's going to be lots of complex cases around, and individual agencies are never ever going to have one person who can realistically cope with that level of specialism. So really unique team. As I say, long time established. And because we hold the register, then we communicate with those people who are registered, but we don't draw a distinction. There are some people who, for their own reasons, choose not to register, but we describe them as registrable. So they've still got needs. It's just that for whatever reason, they don't want to register and get the badge at whatever time in their lives. And there's a whole group of people who may be diagnosed initially in the early stages of eye conditions and not really eligible for registration, but information, advice and guidance might be really helpful to them, you know, at earlier stages. Within the team, we've also got advisors who can support people around benefits claims, general advice and information on a wide range of things. And if we've not got the expertise in certain areas, those people then would make the links to other specialist agencies, and we dovetail in with other agencies in the VI field, you know, like Action for Blind, Henshaws, RNIB, Christopher Grange, and St Vincent's, all the local key charities. And then we do what I describe as sort of the real life everyday things. Then we have what we call active vision clubs, and to some people you might describe them as day centres. They're much more actually in our remit though, because people are undertaking a whole range of activities. So there's entertainment in, there's craft sessions go on, there's quizzes, there's researchers come in, people come in to give presentation on health and well-being topics. You know, there's gardening groups around the centre. And then you've got, and predominantly that might be for people who don't have a lot of company during the week, you know, or whose carers may benefit and the individuals may benefit from a bit of a break from each other, you know, just to get some other sort of stimulation and other conversation. And we have transport that would bring people into those groups. We also then facilitate a lot of other sort of leisure type groups. So we've got the music group. We've got a choir that's recently started. With Zumba has just started. is really good for us because that's in a time where everybody's potentially a little bit negative, you know, because times are hard and funding's being cut. But we've managed to find a way of being able to say we can kick these things off, and actually we'll look and we think they're going to be able to be sustainable. Couldn't do a lot of them without volunteers, and couldn't do a lot of them if people didn't contribute something, a couple of quid or whatever it is, towards having that facility. We've got people learning piano, ukulele, guitars, and that's because we've set some of the groups up to be separate and away from Bradbury Fields. So an example of that might be the iSounds Music Group. It's got its own committee. We support it in doing its funding bids, and this year they got £6,000 from the National Lottery. Now, we've also got a walking club, you know, that's linked to us, run by volunteers. They've got their own structure as well. Our Tandon Club has recently set up its own structure. So instead of Bradbury Fields getting one lottery awards for all bids that could be up to £10,000, each of these groups technically can apply on their own, which means there's more bites of the cherry, really. And again, it's just a different way of working to sort of try and make money stretch further. So whole range of activities, and then we get the strangest requests. We had somebody on holiday in America at Christmas who rung us up to say, I'm in Stuck. Everywhere's closed over here, and I've lost me cane. And I really need a cane because it makes me feel comfortable. So we couriered a cane over to the guy in New York. And that's going the extra mile in some ways. And yeah, it cost a few bob, but it, we shared the cost because it just needed to be done, you know. And again, so we'll respond to, you know, the needs as best we can. We're here first and foremost as a charity to try and help people, and that's what the public support us for. Yes, we have a lot of the contracts which enable us to do really important work at the point of diagnosis, but we've got to make all of this work together. And our biggest driver is that, you know, and myself included here, this is our everyday lives. You know, we'll all need bits of support at different times in different ways. And we'll do the best we can. We've got a great reputation in terms of the local authorities around our catchment area and all the health sort of structures. We're seen as the local charity. But what we've also done is set up a body known as Merseyside Vision Consortium, which brings together the agencies that I mentioned before: Henshaw's, Action for Blind, RNIB, Guide Dogs, the Catholic Blind Institute, which covers St Vincent's and Christopher Grange, because it's tough times. You know, we've lost 30% of the funding into services for blind people in 2 years, and we've done pretty well because we've not lost any major service strand. We've had to reduce some of our costs somewhere, and that's been a bit tough, and we've had the equipment budget that we have where we can give people some bits of equipment. We've had to really introduce quite a tight criteria for those people now, but we're still able to do the job. And you know, as times get harder, it's going to be more and more important that these agencies work together and use our collective resources to deliver the sort of service that we all want to see, in our case, across the Merseyside footprint.
Wow, that's amazing. There's something for everybody, really, isn't there?
Well, we hope so. Yeah, we've all got different needs, you know, so you never quite know what the request will be that will come through today. I know when I moved to Liverpool and I was outside of the area, I needed somebody very quickly to come and mark my boiler. And that was all I really needed. But that meant they had to come and read the instructions just to show me how to use it. And I think we did the washer as well, actually. But once that was done, then I'm relatively low maintenance, you know, until something changes and I need a bit more support. And I think that's what I would want to try and encourage more and more people moving forward. We may not do what people have done in the old days, which is check up on everybody every year. But it's about all of us taking some responsibility to honestly with ourselves say, I think I need a bit of help now again, and tap into those services.
Yeah, and it's the little things, isn't it? Like you say, marking a boiler, marking a washing machine, a cooker maybe, that just make you that little bit more independent within your own space.
Yeah, and somebody who knows, you know, how to do that well, who doesn't make a drama out of it. It's a quick fix and come and sort you. Makes all the difference, because then you don't feel as if you're a burden and, you know, being a nuisance or whatever it is.
And it's really just helping people to get on with their lives, integrate into society, and but also be able to meet friends, do sport, recreation, and, you know, have fulfillment of life, really, isn't it?
It is. And for some people, I remember when years and years ago I did athletics, and I would never have started if I hadn't have done it within one of the support groups for people with sight problems, and then ran for our local mainstream Sefton Harriers Club for a while. You know, and that was the springboard that gave you the confidence to try other things. And I think, you know, it doesn't matter if some people don't ever feel they want to move out of the VI world, because that's just a choice. It's friends wherever people are. But also, for some people, it can be that springboard if they suddenly believe that they couldn't do anything again.
And again, it's sharing up, you know, if you're meeting other people, you're learning how to deal with certain things, learning, as I always say, tips and tricks to get you through life and to develop.
That's exactly it, Mike. One of the new things we've just kicked off at our place is a technology for life session. And initially it was just bringing people together. One of the things I constantly was hearing is that, oh, if you got stuck with that, ring such a body, they know. You know, and of course we know some of those people who to say ring, because we all know what different bits of kit we're all using. But I thought, bring everybody together and see if there's a way that perhaps this might work moving forwards. And I lost a bit of confidence on the first session, so I got the RNIB in to talk about the new talking book structures and such like. But after they'd finished, we all had a chat and everybody's saying, yeah, we need to do this, we need to do that. So we run another session a couple of weeks back, got three or four people in who are VI using their own bits of kits to do sort of awareness sessions for people who were interested. And the buzz in the room was phenomenal, so much so that they want that to continue. And the thinking is probably even once a month for that, and recognising that you could do it at different levels. Now, what we've got to do is find a way to resource that, whether it's allowing some volunteer time, expenses, costs, whatever it may be, or raising some funds to, you know, pay some of the VI people for doing it. Because they're actually providing a service that nobody else is, you know, and could save us time and, more importantly, for a lot of people, a lot of money. But the reason we called it Technology for Life is I also sit on the board of an organisation called Vision 2020 UK, a national body. And one of the subgroups of that organisation is Technology for Life. And I wanted the same sort of name and the same sort of link, because already locally people are saying, I want this sort of device. You know, it's all right having all these great things for accessing your computers, but when I go on holiday, I want a device that I can put my books on dead easily, that isn't necessarily my phone, because I don't want to take my phone on a beach. You know, and it's that sort of feedback that if we can get something happening at ground level, back into some of these, I'll call them boffins nicely, some of them are my friends, but, you know, the boffins who can hear it and actually translate that into product ideas, then that's, you know, we've all got to do that, and I think across the whole country, so that we're actually saying to people, this is what I need, this is what I want, this is what I'd aspire to do if I could, you know, and you can do that sort of thing, not just around technology, but around anything. And for us, technology isn't just phones, you know, iPads. It can be anything. Somebody, and we forget, you know, it's still, for some people, it's a brand new piece of kit. Somebody wanted to understand what the hell a talking microwave was. Somebody wanted to know what the, you know, the labeling speech device was, you know. So we need all to remember that we instantly go to the high levels of technology. For some people, they're not there at the start of this journey, and we need to be sensitive to ensure that they go through the journey at their pace, but they can access it when they're ready.
So what's the best way, Phil, of people finding out a bit more about you? Not as you've covered pretty much a wide range of things in it already, but if people, you know, want to tap into services or get to know more, especially if they're in the Merseyside area, how can they get in touch with you guys?
They can do it several ways. The easiest route for a lot of people still is to to use the phone. So they can ring us on 0151-221-0888. That'll get you through to reception. And if you're interested in anything specific, if you let them know, we can send, you know, information out. We can put you on our newsletter list as well. You can have the newsletter if you're not already receiving it. We do that certainly 4 times a year. I'm trying to up it and get a few more out during the year. But that goes out on CD. You can have it in Braille. You can have it in large printers as well. Obviously, for those that are sort of IT literate, you can access us on the website. We've also got a Facebook page. Loads of people now using Facebook to communicate. And we obviously use Facebook ourselves to post a lot of things that are going on as they're going on. And we're getting a bit better with Twitter, you know, as well. So we're coming into the 21st century and looking at all the new sort of forms of social media. But again, as I say, you can access it just through the normal website and it'll give you information. It'll tell you what current events are coming up as well, because things change all the time. And, you know, if you read something, if you have information on the newsletter, you want to follow it through more. Again, ring reception. They'll get a message to the most appropriate person who can then ring you back or deal with your inquiry.
Well, that's fantastic. Thanks ever so much, Phil, for coming and telling us all about Bradbury Fields.
Just one thing before you go as well, Phil, just thinking on, because we're actually using your facilities for the upcoming St. Vincent's reunion this year, and you've actually got facilities for people to have parties and events as well, haven't you? Do you want to just finish by letting people know if they've got something they want to organise?
Wonderful. It's lovely to be led into that, Mike, because I think sometimes people think, hey, up, he's on the hard sell again. So it's nice for you to lead me into it. I think I referred to earlier that we lost 30% of our funding in 2 years. And what we've had to do is say, what things can we do to raise funds for ourselves? And one of the ideas that we had was, we've got a lovely building and we've got fantastic gardens, a sensory garden, and we're about to continue now to raise the funds to put a wall of remembrance up for people whose dogs have died and everything. But terrific space outside. And we've got a wing of the building now that's got a fantastic Irish conservatory room in. It's got a smaller conservatory. We've put a bar in. So we're able now to do a whole range of functions. And we've had engagement parties. We've had 2 dine-in-the-dark events, actually. We've had Rotary Club meetings. We've got 60th birthday parties. We've done dinners. And, of course, that's what we're aiming to do for the St. Vincent's Past People's Reunion as well. That's a dinner and an entertainment night. So we're not a massive venue. You know, if you were doing a dinner with us, probably 60, 70 would be absolute max. If we're doing sort of buffets and general things and people moving around, you get a few more in, you know. So it's an intimate environment, and we do quite well on events for, you know, older people whose families might not be massive, you know, at that stage. So it's just a great facility. What surprised me, and in some ways maybe it shouldn't have done, but it did, is our own service users have really bought into all of this. So many of the service users have actually booked their own events with us. And what was interesting, I think our walking group booked an event in January. It's the Christmas do, and they did it after Christmas. Just because that's the way it fell for them. But the number of people after that night who said, wow, I didn't expect this, because what happens is we run all of our services in this area during the day, but once a function is on, it's like the hit squad come in, transform the place, replace the tables, set up, decorate it, put all the, you know, cups, saucers, cutlery, whatever's needed, the bar lights up, and it becomes a different place. So there's no sort of sense that, oh, it's a day centre, or it's whatever, or it's a club area you're coming into. It's literally a function room for your event. And of course, if you're VI you're into the building at all, then you feel safe, you know where you are. So that's working really, really well. We've completed our first year. We've obviously had to invest quite a lot of money in it from the charity to get it going. We raised some funds from some trusts to help us with some of the setup costs. we've now got to build it as much as we can in this second year. And a great example of how things are building is there isn't a weekend slot now available in June. You know, there's something going on in all of those weekends. And somebody rang even just today, wanted a slot for October, and that one is booked. So we've had to say, you can't have that one. Do you want to go for the Friday night instead? So if we can really get this to work for us, then it's a way of bringing in, you know, some money. Whether it, you know, I don't think it will replace all of the funding we've lost. It would have to really function flat out to do that. But it'll hopefully, you know, raise enough to replace some of that income, which then enables us to protect services going forwards, because none of us quite know what the future's going to hold now. We know it's going to be really tough. It won't matter which government gets in. And, you know, 2017 looks like a scary year from public sector funding point of view. But we can't sit still, and we won't sit still, because organisations that have are no longer with us, sadly. You've got to keep the imagination going. You've got to try new things. You've got to get people used to working in a slightly different way to what they have done. That's quite hard if people have worked very securely for so long. But the staff are responding well, people supporting, trying to do new things. And, you know, I don't think we'll ever go under, but God forbid if we ever did, we will go under fighting. You know, and I think if people are proactive and positive, then your brain's open for whatever opportunities present themselves, because there are opportunities out there now as well as all the sort of the doom and gloom. And you've got to be just aware and get yourselves in the right position maybe to take some of those opportunities as well.
Okay. Phil, do you want to just give us your email and your telephone number again just before we finish?
Yeah, sure. If anybody wants to email us in generally, they can get us at info@bradburyfields.org.uk. And if they want to telephone us, it's 0151 221 0888, and that'll take you through to reception.
That's brilliant. Thanks, Phil. And if you want a birthday party or anything, then get in touch with Bradbury Fields. I'm sure they'll organise it for you.
We will try our best.
You can contact us by emailing podcast@vitalk.co.uk, on Facebook by searching for VI Talk, on Twitter @VITalkPodcast, and our website address is www.vitalk.co.uk.